Radio Prague News. A shootout in the center of Prague has left one dead and another injured. An investigation into the recently uncovered hospital killings was launched too late, and Otakar Motel has been re-elected ombudsman by the lower house of parliament. A shootout in the center of Prague on Monday night has left a 47-year-old foreign national dead and a police officer injured. The injured officer, Vladimir Ustyanovich, is the former head of the North Moravian Police Intervention Unit. The police are still investigating what led to the gunfight, but suspect that the motive was jealousy. The foreigner first shot at the police and then turned the gun on himself. A police investigation into a number of mysterious hospital deaths between May and September was launched 3 weeks later than it should have been. A spokesperson for the East Bohemian Police said on Tuesday that the officer responsible for distributing tasks failed to recognize the gravity of the hospital's criminal complaint. A former nurse at the hospital has since confessed to murdering 8 patients and attempting to kill several more with the blood-thinning drug heparin. Otakar Motel has been re-elected ombudsman by the lower house of parliament. Mr. Motel stood against 3 candidates put forward by the president, former rector of the Czech Technical University in Prague, Jiří Vicány, human rights activist John Bock, and Senator Jitka Seitlová. The Czech Republic may erect a guarded border with Slovakia, ending free travel inside former Czechoslovakia unless Bratislava tightens controls on its frontier with Ukraine, Czech ambassador to Brussels Jan Kohout said on Tuesday. The 2 European Union newcomers want to enter the EU's borderless Schengen area at the end of 2007, but before Slovakia can join, it must upgrade controls on the border with non-EU member Ukraine. If Bratislava fails the Schengen control test, the Czech Republic would not be admitted to the EU zone of passport-free travel unless it imposed checks at the Slovak border. And former Czech president and anti-communist dissident Václav Havel has denied media reports that a video aired at a recent conference urges tourists not to go to Cuba. The video is 18 months old and was presented at the event to show solidarity with dissidents in Cuba and let the public know that the Cuban regime's political oppression cannot be seen from luxurious hotel rooms, Mr. Havel's secretary said on Tuesday. A quick look at the weather. The next few days are expected to be partly cloudy to overcast, with daytime temperatures between 1 and 5 degrees Celsius. I'm Dita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the number of foreigners living here in the Czech Republic continues to rise. Barrandov Film Studios open a huge new soundstage. Prague's Gender Studies Center celebrates 15 years of fighting for equality. And later, the first steps of the Charter 77 protest document, 30 years later. Stay tuned. The Czech Statistical Office has just released a new report on the number of foreign citizens living in the Czech Republic. Its most recent figures show there are over 300,000 foreign nationals with permanent residence in this country. At the end of last year, they accounted for some 2.5% of the overall population. Although compared to other EU countries, the share is relatively small, it keeps growing steadily. Pavla Horakova has this report.
After the fall of communism, Czech society was quite homogeneous as to the ethnic origin and nationality of the population. After the borders opened, it first became a transit country for migration to the West, but over the past few years it gradually turned into a target country for migrants. In the first 9 months of 2006, the number of foreign nationals registered in the Czech Republic grew by 30,000 to reach 310,000. Ukrainians account for the biggest percentage, around a third, followed by Slovaks, Vietnamese, Poles and Russians. Bohdana Holá from the Czech Statistical Office says the number of foreigners differs according to regions. For example, over one-third of them reside in the capital Prague.
The foreigners most often settle in Prague. They also often head for areas where there are communities from their countries. Vietnamese citizens often settle in the border regions in the west of the country. Russians tend to settle in the Karlovy Vary region or in Prague. It is a trend with all nationalities that they tend to stick to their compatriots and move close to their relatives.
Around 40% of foreigners registered in the Czech Republic have the status of a permanent resident or asylum seeker. At 2.5%, the share of foreign citizens in Czech society is quite low compared to other European countries. Luxembourg reports the highest percentage, almost 64%. The lowest share is reported by neighbouring Slovakia, with just 0.4% of foreign nationals. Demographers say that in recent years, immigration has been helping to improve the population structure in the Czech Republic. Otherwise, the data look quite bleak, according to demographer Jitka Richtaříková.
I must say that we should be worried about our demographic future because mortality will be decreasing, which is a very nice news. However, fertility is extremely low and I don't believe that fertility level will be increasing so much as it is, for instance, in Europe.
That report was by Pavla Horáková. This week, Prague's famous Barrandov film studios opened a brand new soundstage. It's reportedly the most ambitious investment by the studio in decades. Named Max for its massive size, the new stage was built to attract bigger international productions to Prague. Jan Wellinger has the details.
There is really nothing else like it in the Czech Republic, Prague's famous Barrandov studios, one of the oldest and most reputable film studios in Central Europe. Over the years, Barrandov has successfully provided services for many hundreds of projects, including this current worldwide hit, directed by Martin Campbell.
How's it different? Well, first of all, it's Casino Royale.
And not surprisingly, Barrandov hopes to provide stage locations and services for many hundreds more. It should now have ample opportunity. Now that the studios have officially opened Max, a massive new soundstage aimed at attracting bigger productions than ever. According to studio representative Petr Polegniak, in terms of size, the facility is now the largest in Europe at 4,000 square meters.
Dohromady má plochu 4,000 metrů čtverečních. Jedná se o největší zvukový
atelier. Max is also almost 14 meters high, which means it should provide room for even the most demanding of productions. Czech film critic Mirka Spáčilová told Czech Radio that having a soundproof soundstage like the new one at Barrandov will make a difference.
Příliv dalších filmů, nejen už menších nebo nezávislých produkcí, ale hlavně těch opravdu.
The new stage will allow for not only small or independent projects, but for major ones that will bring new funds to the Czech Republic and employ many in the business.
Peněz do republiky znamená to udržování filmových řemesel.
The new Max soundstage is said to have cost 100 million crowns, the equivalent of around 4.7 million US dollars. But the investment has apparently already begun to pay off. According to reports, most of Barrandov's facilities are booked till the summer of 2007, many for one blockbuster production. The second installment of C.S. Lewis's children's classic, The Narnia Chronicles, titled Prince Caspian, the new film will aim to follow the success of the first in the series, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, also partly shot in the Czech Republic.
Prague's Gender Studies Center is currently celebrating its 15th anniversary. Founded in the heady ideological tumult following the Velvet Revolution, the group has grown into an important advocacy organization for women and sexual minorities. Ilya Maritz spoke with some old and new members at a birthday celebration for the group on Monday night, and he brings us this report.
In 1991, Laura Beshaken was a Canadian teaching English in Prague. Somehow, she fell in with a group of like-minded Czech feminists. They started meeting regularly at someone's apartment to talk about women's issues, And out of those discussions, the Gender Studies Center was born.
There was no program, there was no board of directors that sat around and had days making vision statements. It was just like, okay, let's go, let's just do it. We don't know what it is, but we're going to do it. All kinds of people converged in that little tiny apartment on Klemenska Street. And in the meantime, we started creating a library. It felt like the first time, like the first courses on gender studies, the first time we had this press conference about violence against women.
That press conference, says Bashakin, got a lot of people talking about an issue that had been hushed up during the communist years. It also raised the organization's profile.
A lot of journalists came out, a lot of articles came from that first press conference about violence against women, because no one was talking about those things.
In the decade and a half that followed, the Gender Studies Center has expanded from a ragtag collective into a well-known advocacy group, which lobbies parliament and gives advice to individuals and corporations. Today, the center has a permanent office in Prague, a budget of about 8 million crowns, and 12 full-time employees. The director, Alena Kralikova, is a member of the first generation of women to grow up with the center as a resource.
In 91, or when I was at high school, it was actually something that not many people knew about. But after 98, when the organization really has started its information activities, there were many more projects and so on. So the organization has become much better known. And when I was writing my thesis at university, I already knew it very well.
Kralikova says there is lots more for the group to do, especially when it comes to getting women into positions of political power.
After the last election we had this year in June for the parliament, there are only 15% of women in the parliament, while in the previous period there were 16.5. So we've lost some 1% in half. With the heads of regions, as we have 14 regions in the Czech Republic, there's no woman among those people, which I think it's really sad.
Next year, the organization will kick off a campaign called 50-50, aimed at getting women the same workplace opportunities as men. The Gender Studies Center will also be looking for a new director. Alena Kralikova steps down in February.
And thanks for that report, Ilya Maritz. Now, moving on to something quite different, numerous newspapers and magazines serve the Czech community in the United States, from nationwide publications such as Americké listy to regional titles like Czech Nebraska. There are also several internet websites and email newsletters, such as the weekly Dumpling News. It's produced by Zora Pergel, a woman of Czech descent based in Florida. I asked her how Dumpling News has been received since its launch in April last year.
Well, I started out with 700 email addresses, and in a year and a half, via word of mouth and the internet, I have 500,000 subscribers.
What kind of subjects are you reporting on or writing about in the Dumpling newsletter?
Many, many different subjects. There'll be news about clubs and organizations there. There'll be history in there. There'll be traditions in there, festivals, the entire realm of what's going on in Czech America.
Are there other organizations or other publications doing the same thing or a similar thing to what you're doing?
Yes, there are. Yes, there are. Many organizations and clubs here in the United States have newsletters that are geared towards their own specific group. And what this newsletter does is it advertises all of the different groups.
Does it also have a commercial side? I see, for example, on
yes.
your website,
you
sell things like dumplings.
Yes, I'm lucky enough to have several advertisers, Czech American businesses, on the website. We have Chateau Dumplings, we have Crawford Sausages, both are out of Chicago.
Are these products hard to find in the States?
Yes, they are. They're very hard to find in the United States. In perhaps a small Czech town, you'll have a butcher shop. But in places like Los Angeles or Miami, you just don't find it.
Also, I see on your website you advertise Kroy, the national costume.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's my friend and client, Maggie Germala.
And does she make those Kroy, the costumes, in the States?
She makes them in the States. Yes, sir, she does. As a matter of fact, she is the premier Kroy maker in the United States.
Tell me also, I see on the site, you have something called polka cruises.
Oh, yes. Maggie and I created the Czech American Polka Cruises and Tours, and every 6 months we travel to different parts of the world, and we bring live polka bands with us, and they're called the Czech American Polka Cruises.
I was talking there to Zora Pergel, the lady behind Dumpling News, and you'll find their address on our website. Now, in the last part of our program today, Rob Cameron takes a look back at the early days of Charter 77 in this week's edition of Talking Point.
30 years ago, a handful of people met in a flat in Prague to discuss the communist regime's failure to observe fundamental human rights. What grew out of that meeting was to become the first dissident movement in the Soviet bloc, a movement which played a key role in bringing about the end of totalitarian communism in Czechoslovakia. And perhaps typically for a country that seems to produce more than its fair share of oddities and idiosyncrasies, it all began with the psychedelic rock band. In 1976, the Plastic People of the Universe, a loose outfit of rock musicians inspired by artists such as Frank Zappa and the Velvet Underground, had become something of a legend. Formed in the late 60s, their moody, psychedelic sound had earned them a legion of fans across communist Czechoslovakia, but also the unwanted attention of the police. With their long hair, weird sound, and blatant refusal to conform to the stifling norms of the culturally barren period of normalization that followed the 1968 Soviet-led invasion, the Plastics must have been the regime's worst nightmare. In 1976, the authorities arrested 4 members of the group, among them saxophonist Vratislav Brabanec.
Until when we were arrested, the 2 years we were really nervous what could happen to us, because we were first actors. Everybody knew where is the bomb of the underground music, where is the center. I guess they were still waiting for some good moment. It was directed by the Communist Party, exactly that what we know right now.
The Plastic People were charged with a number of crimes, including breach of the peace, something that carried a maximum sentence of 5 years. Several members later served time in prison for the crime of playing underground rock music. There the story might have ended, had the Plastics' treatment not come to the attention of a small group of intellectuals opposed to the regime. On December 10, 1976, 5 of them met in a flat in Prague's Tyršova Street, belonging to a translator called Jaroslav Kožan.
Everybody knew how important this thing was. No one tried to back away from it. It was clear to everyone that we had to do something. So we did it.
What they did was draw up a document criticizing the communist government for failing to implement human rights provisions of a number of documents it itself had signed. They included the Czechoslovak Constitution, the so-called Helsinki Accords, and United Nations Conventions on Political, Civil, Economic, and Cultural Rights. The document described these signatories as a loose, informal and open association of people, united by the will to strive individually and collectively for respect for human and civil rights in our country and throughout the world. And most crucially, everything they said was carefully designed to remain well within the boundaries of the laws of communist Czechoslovakia, which, on paper at least, allowed organized opposition. Among the 5 who drew up the document was Václav Havel, who was about to be thrust into the vanguard of a 20-year battle with the communist regime.
When they arrested the Plastic People, I and a number of friends, felt that this was something very dangerous. It was a warning signal.
On January 1, 1977, the group released the document, bearing the signatures of 242 people. It was smuggled to 3 newspapers in Western Europe for publication. Several days later, Charter 77 activists such as Havel, Ludwig Vaculík and Pavel Landowski began trying to distribute the document in Czechoslovakia itself. The reaction of the regime was harsh and predictable. The Charter 77 manifesto is described in the official media as an anti-state, anti-socialist and demagogic, abusive piece of writing. Those who had signed it were vilified as traitors and renegades, loyal servants of imperialism and even Zionism. Signatories were thrown out of their jobs. Some were arrested and imprisoned, their children expelled from schools. Journalist Marek Tomin was the son of well-known dissident parents who held regular meetings in their home.
State security and the Ministry of Interior tolerated this for a little while, and then the harassment started. Eventually, everybody who came knew that within 5 minutes, maybe 10, the police would be there and there would be a raid and everybody would be arrested. They could be interrogated for 24 hours, 48 hours, and maybe held longer. And we never knew. And the thing about the 70s, you know, as compared to the 50s, the kind of crimes of what was going on in the 50s, you know, the 70s can't be compared. I mean, people were disappearing. I mean, it was Stalinism. People were being executed to begin with. People were being sent to work camps, to uranium mines. These are things that weren't happening in the 70s. But we didn't know. Quite simply, Charter never knew what the next step is going to be. Me and my brother, we weren't sure if our parents weren't going to be arrested the next day. And we had several sort of amazing plans, of course, because we messed around as kids. And we had a plan for escaping from the country. You know, we said if our parents all get arrested, we will not allow ourselves to be taken to children's home. You know, we'll escape and we'll roam the world for the rest of our lives, you know, away from communism. And so the atmosphere was such. At times it really did become very sinister.
The regime's response only seemed to fuel greater dissent and, in turn, more repression. An anti-charter was created, which leading public figures were encouraged to sign. The communists even launched an operation designed to force opponents of the regime into exile, and in many cases succeeded. By the end of the 1980s, as communism in Eastern Europe began to crumble, members of Charter 77 saw their opportunity and became more involved in organising opposition to the regime. It was Charter 77 activists, led by Václav Havel, who formed the nucleus of the group, which negotiated the smooth and peaceful transition of power from totalitarian communism to democracy. The Plastic People of the Universe are still around, still making rather strange rock music, which is essentially all they wanted to do in the first place. Charter 77's role in the regime's demise is still a matter of debate, but saxophonist Vrata Brabenec says for him, his group, and for Czechoslovak society as a whole, Charter 77 was a watershed.
We knew that we were not living in a moon, we were living in an East Bloc, and we knew the situation, we were reading what was happening around us, of course, that we were not divided from the other society, from the other young people. The truth is, after the Charter 77 were published, the Czech society were divided. Some people were for the Charter 77, but most of the people, I guess, were still against it, because it was very easy to live in a communist regime. Don't worry about the jobs, and everything was, let's say, comfortable. It was very comfortable for most of the people.
And for Yaroslav Kozhan, the translator and now publisher in whose flat it all began, while Charter 77 didn't achieve everything it set out to achieve, it remains a source of deep and lasting pride to this day.
To byly naše vize, jak říkáte, jo, které se v něčem se povedly.
We had a vision. Part of it was fulfilled, part of it wasn't. I think that's natural with every manifesto, with every document like Charter 77. Such manifestos can never be fulfilled 100%. But I think what it did, the way it shook the conscience of the nation, was wonderful. That edition of Talking Point by Rob Cameron brings us to the end of today's programme here on Radio Prague. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's programme, or if you've got any questions that you'd like to ask us, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write a letter to Vinohradska 12, Vinohradska 12, 12099 Prague 2, or send an email, that address english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye and take care.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures, 7h27, 5930, 7345, Europe. 8h30, 8h57, 9860, 11600, Europe. Dix-sept heures trente, 17h57, 5930, 15710, Europe, Afrique centrale. 19h30, 19h57, 5930, 9430, Europe, Afrique. 23h, 23h27, 5930, 7345, Amérique du Nord. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.